Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine Podcast for today. We're talking to America's foremost integrative cardiologist, Dr. Stephen Sinatra. He's author of a new book called Health Revelations from Heaven and Earth. We discussed it in part one. But in part two, I'd like to talk to Dr. Sinatra about some of the research papers that he's been writing. You know, part one, we talked a lot about spirit. We talked about things, you know, maybe on a less material plane. But Dr. Sinatra has not entirely left the physical plane of the earth. And he's also engaged in mainstream research that appears regularly in medical journals. So you say you've written a series of papers in the past couple of years. You've been very active publishing research on cardiology, right?
Yeah. Actually, as you know, one of the greatest discoveries I ever made was metabolic cardiology, where, you know, if you put people on ribose and coenzyme Q10, magnesium and carnitine, it's almost like giving fertilizers for the heart because, you know, mitochondrial DNA, unlike nuclear DNA, have no defense mechanisms. So over time, with wear and tear of mitochondria, you get an aging effect. And basically, metabolic cardiology has been my passion for years. And it's been amazing. But like, I've always often wondered why, you know, when people need a heart transplant and they would come see me, and some of these people would get transplanted. A lot of them didn't, though. They'd be waiting for hearts because lots of times there's not enough hearts to go around. And I would put them on metabolic cardiology. And lots of times metabolic cardiology bought them time, where when a heart did come up for a transplant, patients had to make their own decision whether to have the transplant or not. And I'll tell you, Ron, a lot of them decided not to have the transplant because they got so remarkably improved on metabolic cardiology. And what I realized after I read a scientific paper back in 2009 is that what metabolic cardiology does is it drives ATP in a preferential direction. In other words, it helps the mitochondria make ATP in the body. You know, our body makes carnitine, our body makes coenzyme Q10. We have to take magnesium in as in food or as a supplement, but our body makes ribose as well. So when our body makes these three nutrients, so to speak, if the body doesn't make them fast enough, or if the body is compromised because of the polluted environment or heavy metals and affected mitochondria or insecticides or pesticides or phthalates or bisphenol A, the list goes on and on. But if the mitochondria become injured and we cannot make these metabolic products of ATP, well, then we're behind the eight ball. And what I really realized was that when you drive ATP in a preferential direction, you not only repair heart cells, but you rejuvenate heart cells and restore heart cells. And the way this happens, I believe, is through stem cell repair, because the body has the intrinsic wisdom to heal itself. And the intrinsic wisdom is in our stem cells. So if you give the body what it needs, you know, organic, non-GMO foods or high vibrational waters, or, you know, vitamins and minerals or like metabolic cardiology constituents, then what you're doing is you're supporting the wisdom of the body through stem cell repair. And I really believe it's the stem cells that are really rescuing the cardiac tissue. And what I learned from this Science article, which was published back in 2009, and incidentally, it came out of Europe, but the New England Journal did a nice editorial on it. They called it cardiomyocyte renewal, was that up to 42% of the heart can be regenerated over a lifetime. Now think about that. You could have a massive heart attack, let's say in your 30s, and you think your life is over, but it's not. Because if you can keep living, let's say another decade, let's say on pharmaceutical meds and living on a healthy diet, lifestyle changes, metabolic cardiology, et cetera, if you can live another 10 or 15 years and allow your stem cells to take over, now you can regenerate damaged heart tissue. So I am very, very optimistic about, you know, cardiomyocyte renewal and heart cell repair because of what I learned about the stem cells. And by the way, we learned that from carbon-14 testing. We learned that through nuclear testing when atomic bombs were being tested in Nevada and New Mexico, you know, back in the 1950s and late 40s. So something came good out of the Cold War, Ron. So basically, you know, metabolic cardiology is where I've been doing a lot of research. I've been doing research in, you know, the rat model, the human model. I did research recently in the equine model because horses, you know, they get cardiac problems. I got two horses who died suddenly from cardiac problems. And, you know, horses like humans, they eat a lot of grass. And, you know, a human that's a pure vegetarian, they have low levels of coenzyme Q10 in the body. And guess what? So the horses. So, you know, I've been really doing a lot of my own research because one of the things that I'm trying to do for the equine world is, you know, improve that world as well, because those horses, whether they're, you know, dressage horses or Olympic horses or thoroughbred race horses or riding horses or barrel horses, they have as much oxidative stress as, or even more than NFL athletes. So, I've been trying to heal the equine through metabolic cardiology. That's one of the papers I did recently.
Wow.
I did something on ribose and on the equine. I did a paper on statins and diabetes. That's something that's really been coming to the forefront is the incidence of diabetes from statin use in both males and females now.
Yeah, as I recall, you have had sort of a personal evolution about statins. I think at first you were sort of, I'll kind of go with the flow, as I was. You know, initially when statins were introduced, they were sort of wonder drugs. They really promised to revolutionize the way we treated heart disease. And there's still a great deal of buy-in by the conventional medical community about that. But over time, both of us have developed skepticism about statins. Are you inveterately opposed to statins at this point, or you just take a kind of a balanced view, try to avoid them where possible?
Well, a little bit more than that. I mean, first of all, statins do some very good things. I mean, you know, they have potent antioxidants. They're anti-inflammatories. They actually thin the blood, which is really the most important aspect in cardiology. So if you bring blood thinning to the table, that in itself is very, very useful in preventing cardiovascular events. But basically, statins also lower cholesterol. And, you know, we developed this whole myth in this country that cholesterol causes heart disease. Now, look, I mean, cholesterol is found at the scene of the crime, but it's not the perpetrator. I mean, there are far more significant risk factors than high cholesterol. I mean, higher blood sugar to me is a much more significant risk factor than high cholesterol. High triglycerides is a much more worse risk factor than high cholesterol. Low HDL is a much more worse risk factor than high, you know, LDL cholesterol. So do statins have a bright side? Yes, they do. And I use them in men, only men, Ron. I mean, you know, very few women. But, you know, in men with a cardiovascular event, men with coronary calcification, men with a bypass, a stent, you know, men under the age of 75, I'll use a statin with coenzyme Q10. Now, do I treat women with statins? No. I've been so disappointed in the past. You know, maybe I'll treat 1%, 2% of women with statins. Very, very rarely in children, unless I have a familial hypercholesterolemia with statin, you know, with a cholesterol of 5, 6, 7, or 800. But usually those children need a liver transplant because they've dealt a horrific set of bad genes. They were double recessive. But a heterozygotes, you know, who have an LDL greater than 190, could you treat them with statins? Yeah, possibly. I mean, but that's, you're talking 1 in 500 people in the United States, but still 3 million people. But you know, the pharmaceutical establishment or the conventional medical establishment, I should say, you know, they want you to treat cholesterol numbers. I mean, to me, that's poor medicine. That's not good medicine. You know, if you're a male with proven coronary disease and you're under the age of 75, yeah, I'll give you a statin. But not to lower cholesterol, but to really thin the blood and to help, you know, these males who have low HDLs to help to counteract the low HDL. Because remember, when you do have a low HDL, not only do you have more immune system dysfunction, but you have thicker blood. And when your blood is like red ketchup, that's when we get into advanced cardiovascular disease and cardiovascular events and stroke events as well.
Well, you said it's different for women, also for people over 75. So why do you differentiate between the effects of statins in a target population that might benefit middle-aged men who have really high risk versus women? Women sometimes have high risk. But what is it about women that renders statins less beneficial?
Women, first of all, women and men, when it comes to heart disease, are vastly different. I mean, I think I was one of the first cardiologists to really break that story back in the year 2000 when I wrote Heart Sense for Women. I mean, women and men are vastly different when it comes to pharmaceutical drugs, when it comes to treating high blood pressure, even taking over-the-counter analgesics. When women take over-the-counter analgesics, like, you know, acetaminophen or non-steroidals, they can get more cardiovascular events. You know, women have smaller coronary vessels. They have a smaller left ventricle. They're more prone to what we call diastolic dysfunction, which means that the heart struggles with blood when it's filling with blood. So women have so many more different issues than men, and they have anatomical issues. But the thing with women that bothers me the most with statins is that they have far more side effects than men. And basically, a male has the most to gain, but a woman has the most to lose. And the problem with a lot of women is that, you know, women with high cholesterol who are being treated with statins, and I've seen so many women in their 30s and late 20s and early 40s being treated with statin drugs just because of high cholesterol. And to me, that's a travesty. And because a lot of these women will develop side effects, and they're more prone to side effects. And the side effects are horrific. I mean, there's data to show that, you know, women on statins for more than 10 years get more breast cancer. Both men and women get more cataract, more diabetes. The Women's Health Initiative showed like a 48% chance in postmenopausal women and 20% chance in premenopausal women. The Finnish study showed like almost a 50% chance of getting diabetes in men, you know, on statins. So, look, statins do a lot of good things for people, but the doctor has to choose wisely and choose the right patient for the right statin drug. And when you do that, you're going to help your patient. What you and I both believe is we don't want to do any harm. So we want to avoid harm. And if you look at the early statin studies, you're right, Ron, they were like wonder drugs. But, you know, since the Vioxx affair happened in 2005, you know, there's been very few statin studies that are so remarkable as the earlier studies. But I will tell you about one early study, which I thought was phenomenal for statins, and that was the West of Scotland study, where they took high-risk men. And you mentioned something about risk a few minutes ago. If you take a high-risk male with a low HDL who's a smoker at the same time, and that's what the 4S study looked at, the West of Scotland study, they looked at very aggressive, hostile, angry, type A men who had low HDLs who were smokers, the worst combination for heart disease, the very worst combination. It's like triple handcuffs. And when they put these men on statins, that study showed a significant absolute improvement in risk. I'm not talking relative risk now. I'm talking absolute, where these men not only had far less cardiovascular events, but these men also had longevity as well on statins. But that's a very unique group. Now, will the same group, like women with high cholesterol, get the same effect? Absolutely not. Because remember, the way statins are really working is that they make blood from red ketchup going to red wine. That's what earthing does. That's what grounding does. And basically, whenever you can make the blood thinner, and you're delivering more oxygen, you know, to the tissues, to the mitochondria, you know, then you're getting a much more therapeutic and remarkable effect.
So if, say, an 82-year-old comes into your office and for the first time he or she has a cholesterol of, say, 305 or 310, it's just gone up and up and up, you wouldn't think to put them on statins?
Absolutely not, because do you realize the Framingham Heart Study with these people? That started in the late 1940s, and there's still some people alive. And even when I was in my cardiovascular fellowship in Hartford, Connecticut, we tracked the Farmington Health Study. Do you realize that the oldest people in that study have the highest cholesterols?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Highest cholesterols, and there's pockets in the...
Correlated with survival, exactly. Right?
In other words, the people with the highest cholesterols live the longest.
Yep.
So, and some of those study researchers, I know them. I mean, you know, they went psychotic. They couldn't believe it, but data is data, and science is science. So basically, people with the highest cholesterols were living longer. Now, look, if you have a high cholesterol with high blood sugar, high blood pressure, and you're a cigarette smoker, you know, you're going to get more heart disease. But like right now, the single worst risk factor for cardiovascular disease is having a blood sugar, you know, greater than 70, a fasting blood sugar greater than 75 milligrams per DL. Do you believe that?
Wow. So, and that's a very low bar because, because a lot of people have blood sugars well above that, and that's considered normal.
We used to think 90 was great. We used to think under 100 was great. Now we're lowering the bar to 75. And get this, Ron, we are not only lowering the bar to 75, but now we're saying a 1 hour or a 2 hour postprandial, 100 to 120. Remember the old days when we did the glucose tolerance test?
180.
Basically, yeah. 180. Now we've lowered that. So in other words, the real truth about cardiovascular disease is inflammation. The single most inflammatory mediator of all time is insulin, because insulin is the most endothelial cell, endothelial unfriendly hormone. It's a very potent inflammatory hormone. So if we have surges of insulin due to the surges of blood sugar, and the blood sugar is going up and down, these are the people that are more risk of heart disease. And by the way, that's another thing that Tommy learned in heaven. Tommy was told that it was sugar that was the most egregious food that we can put in, or calorie dense situation that we can put into our body that causes enormous inflammation. It's not cholesterol. Mm-hmm. Cholesterol protects us. Sugar harms us. So we have to really get our patients to really look at carbohydrates, sugar, you know, all the things that Bill Davis and Dr. Perlmutter are talking about, you know, brain and weak belly. We need to cut down on the sugars in our society. And look, sodas bring nothing to the table. Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely.
So we need to be more cautious about what we put into our mouth.
So all this stuff is very exciting. And so what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? Where can people access some more resources that talk to this? First of all, your book, Health Revelations from Heaven and Earth. You've also written a book on earthing, right? You mentioned that several times. People can find that where?
Oh, gosh. You know, Borders, you know, bookstores, Amazon.com. I mean, Rodale has Health Revelations, you know, anywhere. I mean, all those books are out. I mean, they're everywhere.
Good.
I mean, you can Twitter, you know, there's Health Revelations from Heaven and Earth has its own Facebook and Twitter. And then there's an ebook series, because when we wrote Health Revelations, Ron, you know, like I said before, I've written over 20 books. This book, I had 1,000 pages. It was like crazy. It was like nuts. It was so big. It was like three books in one. And when we had to chop it down to like 250 pages, I ended up doing an ebook series with Rodale where I did video for over 2 hours, you know, not only showing people about, you know, alternative nostril breathing, how to support heart rate variability or meditation, but we did a series on near-death experience. We had 100 pages in this book totally taken out because, you know, the near-death experience literature was so profound that we brought science to the table, but yet we had to take that out, so we put that in the ebook series. Another thing we did, which I actually learned from a Jewish rabbi, it was amazing, was how to get people to cross over. How do you get people to cross over to the other side? In other words, what do you say to a dying person at your bedside? And, you know, that's in the book, but, you know, I did more justice to it on a video because it's so important to, you know, whether you're a stranger, you're at an automobile accident, or, you know, you're a loved one coming to the hospital to see, a relative, it's so important that if you are there when a person crosses, you need to say some good things like look for a light, think pleasant thoughts, say some good things to the person. I mean, it's so important to create positive intention and not go across to the other side with a lot of fear and uncertainty. Mm. But positive intention is very, very important.
That's very profound. Well, look, I have to say I'm in great admiration of the range and breadth of your intellectual curiosity because it extends from the basic sciences, you know, mainstream research that gets published in journals, to what would be termed by some, you know, the esoteric, because a lot of this stuff is not acknowledged in mainstream science. But it's real, it's important, it's relevant, and you've got a very, very creative imagination. to pursue all these different directions. So congratulations to you as your astounding career continues. And I want to thank you very much for joining us. And your website is drsinatra.com, and you've got a newsletter as well, right?
Yeah, actually, the drsinatra.com is a commercial website that sort of pays the bills and everything. I have heartmdinstitute.com as well. That's a purely informational website where there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pages of material and lots of videos and stuff like that with no commercialism, which is a good thing, which is a very good thing, because people need the information, and information is important. It's like what you do, Ron. I mean, without the right information, there's a lot of, you know, fuzzy stuff on the internet. So hopefully, with you and I can give people the truth and the right information.
Right, and we want to thank you also very much for your contributions to the Intelligent Medicine website. Your articles appear regularly, and they're very, very user-friendly and popular. So thanks for being part of our outreach as well. So once again, thanks so much for joining us. Stephen Sinatra, author of a new book, Health Revelations from Heaven and Earth. And I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.